Hey everybody, Shane Presley with Rock Paper Podcast. I want to tell you about my friends over at Music Record Shop. Find them over there at the Dodd Zach building in the Grand Center area, right here in St. Louis, Missouri. They come by this Friday and every Friday, July 28th. They'll have new records in store from Alice Cooper, Arcade Fire, Iron Maiden, Rings of Saturn, and a whole lot more. Find a full listing of details and shop 24/7 at musicrecordshop.com. Also this year, Music Record Shop is the official record store of Lutefest 2017. So get involved, go on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram and follow them along and figure out how you can win some free Lutefest tickets coming up. So get involved, support local, shop local. Check out musicrecordshop.com. This episode of Rock Paper Podcast is brought to you by Gigabit Rocks. Check it all out at gigabitrocks.com. They're one of the best online tools for meeting artists regionally and nationwide, and they want to help you plan your next tour. It's essentially a great tool for networking and linking up with artists all over the country, and then they can help you pack your next show in their city. So reach out on gigabitrocks.com. Check them all out on your social media, your Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And whether you want a gigabit more or a gigabit less, one thing's for sure, Gigabit Rocks.
Podcast is kind of like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
This is Michael Tomko of An Undercover Weekend, and you're listening to the Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Hey everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from St. Louis, Missouri. Hanging out today at the Royale in St. Louis, Missouri with Michael Tomko. Welcome to the show, man.
Awesome, thanks for having me.
This is exciting stuff. We just recently become friendly on Facebook and stuff. And,
yeah.
I said, let's make this happen. Let's talk about Undercover Weekend coming up. And
absolutely, glad to be here.
For sure, yeah, man. This is our first time really getting to meet, to talk, and so I kind of want to know more about what you're up to and like how you got into doing all this stuff, and then of course we got the big party to plug and things. So.
Sure, sure.
But you were telling me just a moment ago, this has been 11 years now you've been
doing this? Yeah, it's 11 years of An Undercover Weekend. It's interesting. I've lived a lot of lives in music, I guess, over the years, and I have a degree in audio engineering from Webster, and moved away to New Orleans for a while, got chased back by Katrina, was working in studios down there, and used to tour in the band Gentleman Auction House. So we used to spend about 125 days a year on the road, and really got to sort of live that music industry failure kind of life, getting stranded out on the road and all the crazy stories you hear about that stuff. And as a part of kind of building that band up, one of the things that I was doing a lot was booking shows. You know, it just became the natural thing to say, well, I'll book shows here so that we can do favors for bands in other cities and help ourselves. And so I started booking at, you know, the Way Out, originally Way Out Club, and was doing like 20 shows a month there at one point.
Yeah.
And then kind of, you know, outgrew that a little bit. Shows were getting a little bigger. Moved to Off-Broadway and sort of got into this thing where it just made sense to have like some kind of annual events. You know, I had a thing called the Indie Rock Ice Cream Social that we used to do that was pretty sweet, where you got ice cream and saw bands, and it was like this weird fun combination. And
yeah.
I used to do a big like Christmas show called A Very Merry Christmas Spectacular, and that got like in Spin Magazine one year and stuff, you know, just things that like took off more than I guess they should have. And so having seen things around the country that other cities were doing, primarily Champaign-Urbana, where they have this thing called the Great Cover-Up that's now, I think, like 25 years strong. And, you know, Champaign-Urbana is a really interesting town because they have such a great music scene, and so great, in fact, that, like every show there is a sellout. It's crazy, you know. And it's partly because it's a college town and there's very few venues and it's just kind of, that's what you can go do.
Right.
And so they do the Great Cover Up, which is kind of a similar concept. And, the difference is though, you don't know who any of the bands are going to cover until they take the stage. And it works really well in a small town, in a town where this is just the thing to do tonight. So this is where people are going to be. Here in St. Louis, you got to kind of like prove it a little bit to people to get them to come out. So we kind of, you know, in 2007, it was like, well, let's give this a try. Let's see what happens. And the music scene and more, maybe the scene is the wrong word, because I don't like that as much. I don't necessarily do this for the scene, so to speak, because I think of this as an opportunity for folks outside of the scene to kind of get involved. And anyway, things were very, very different here. The club landscape was different in 2007. And so anyway, it was like, let's try something different. Let's do something really different. And so an Undercover Weekend was sort of born. And I mean, we started real late. I think we really got things kicked off in like May, and the event was, in September. And, you know, we invited like 10 bands from town. My band was going to play Gentleman Auction House, and we were too at odds with each other personally to actually follow through with playing. And, so, you know, lineup changed throughout the progression. And the whole idea was just like, you know, what if we each picked like one of our heroes and we played a 30-minute set of that music? What would that be like, you know? And it was crazy because, you know, we invited these bands and everybody was really on board, and we had like team meetings almost. Like, we got all the bands together and like talked about like what are we going to do, and kind of orchestrated the thing like as a group. And it was just like one of the first things, at least I knew of, that was going on in town where like they were getting local bands like for months in advance, like planning this thing. And I, there was even a joke at the beginning where it was like, we all joked that we would pool our money and get Becky Queen of Carpets to host it.
What?
And, you know, that was a joke, but she ended up coming to the show, and we still don't know how. The RFT even wrote about that because it was so strange. She just stood on the side and watched the show, which is really, really strange. But but it was crazy because, you know, we put this thing together, had no real expectation of what it was going to be. To me, it was just like, you know, I used to think that, like, if you gave a show a name and you did a cool poster, that, like, it was somehow different than any other local show on any other night, right? So that's all it really was. And we nearly sold the place out both nights, and the bar literally sold completely out of alcohol by the end of the weekend. And Steve Pullman, who owns Off Broadway, like called me on Sunday, and he was out of town, and he was like, "What the hell was that?" Like, he goes, "My bartenders are calling me, like, we don't have any alcohol anymore." And, you know, I mean, it was just this like unbelievable party. And I remember going into it thinking like, well, if we get a lot of people who aren't initiated with these bands out, what I hope is that they will be so excited by who they're covering and by the execution of it that they're going to want to go see them be themselves. And I'll never forget it. Annie Zaleski from the RFT, who was the editor at the time for the music section, she came running up to me after Fatback played as the Cars, and she's like, "Oh my God, why have I never seen these guys? I can't wait to go see them be themselves." And so, like, the model just sort of proved itself, you know.
Right.
So the next year, you know, by the next year, we had already, you know, the Bluebird was up and running, and so the show moved there, and I very ambitiously thought, well, why don't we make it four nights instead of two? And we did this like 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s thing, and it just was like absolutely huge. Like, I don't even know. I mean, back then things were different. I mean, we had MySpace. We didn't have any of the other sites really to promote it on,
right?
And, you know, I don't even feel like we did that much promotion for it. It was all very afterthought kind of thing, but it was absolutely packed every night. And I mean, I'll never forget, like, Fatback as Huey Lewis that year, they got chanted onto the stage with people yelling Huey, you know. And and after the fact were asked to play that Huey set so many times they eventually like completely disavowed,
right,
you know, Huey Lewis. And But it just kind of every year has been this like community thing, and I've kind of kept trying to quit doing it because it's a whole lot of work. But like usually by the end of the weekend, people are already asking like, "Here's what I want to do next year. What should I do?" And it just kind of keeps going.
Yeah.
So yeah, that kind of brings us 11 years for sure. In. I don't know.
Well, so Fatback played the first two. Is that what you said?
They played at least the first two. Yeah, I think. So yeah, I think just the first 2 years.
There's a lot of people repeat bands and stuff.
Yeah, like the most we've ever had. Via Dove played 5 years. That's the most. I think the next most is probably three. I think there's a handful of bands mm-hmm. who played three times. Like Dots Not Feathers played three times.
And always as a different group.
Yeah. We've had. Oh man, out of 132 sets that we've done, I think we've had less than 10 repeat tributes.
Yeah.
We have a 5-year rule, so like we won't repeat a tribute for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
But we've only had, I mean, we've had The Cure twice, but like completely different sets, you know. Like the first time The Cure was this very like post-rock, like people were crying. It was wild. But the next time was more of this, like, Pretty in Pink kind of Cure. Like, this very, like, high school, like, nostalgia Cure. It was very, very different.
Yeah.
In a good way, you know. We've done Nirvana twice now, you know. We've done a few bands a couple times. But mostly it's been all new, you know, new each time. And this year, I mean, out of 15 sets, we don't have any repeats, which is crazy.
Yeah. excuse me. That that's I always thought was cool. Like you kind of mentioned it when you were telling me tribute sets or different things or whatever it might be. But then like all of a sudden, like that's kind of like their thing. Like you can do it. That show, you know, twice a year, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to do, but it's like, it's kind of crazy how like they kind of, you don't know what it's going to be until you try it, and all of a sudden, like then all of a sudden, like people are like, yeah, that was really cool, let's do it again, and like so.
Yeah, I mean, for example, like Via Dove's Rock Rolling Stone set from year three is now the Street Fighting Band.
Yeah.
Which sells out the Pageant,
right?
You know, which is a very interesting like progression, right? Of like sure. literally like a set, like it, one set
yeah.
turns into a tribute band eventually.
Well, I think I had Kevin Gagnepain from El Monstero on,
mm-hmm.
and he basically said a lot of the similar story with El Monstero starting was that they couldn't play Stir songs at the moment. And so they went in and started doing this like Masked Avengers thing,
mm-hmm.
And started doing a couple Pink Floyd tunes, and then all of a sudden that led into the next year they booked it as El Monstero,
right?
And they did a whole set of it, and then now, what, 15 years or some more, maybe more.
Yeah,
no more than that. Whatever it is, I don't know. I forget. I think 18 now.
Hmm.
I think they've done. I think the last Christmas show was 18 years they did it.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, now they're playing the amphitheater and it's selling out like eight shows in a row, eight to nine nights.
Yeah.
Like so. Yeah. It's crazy how it all starts with one night. You know.
Right.
And then all of a sudden it grows into something special like this. So.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, St. Louis is very keen on familiarity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you think about, like, I mean, you've been to tons of concerts, so I'm sure you know this feeling, but, like, what I'll call opening band syndrome, right, where you're there to see someone else. And, you know, probably the vast majority of the room, maybe you and I are special in this respect, but the vast majority of people in the room are not really paying attention because it's not familiar yet, right? And I think that's what's kind of interesting about tribute sets or, you know, really, like, what an Undercover Weekend tries to put on is this idea of like familiarity as the gateway drug, right? It's you get kind of hooked on what this band sounds like, playing songs that you know to the point where you say, well, wait a minute, now they're familiar to me, so I want to go hear them do their original music, you know. And St. Louis somehow, you know, has seemed like they really come out and support tributes.
Yeah.
They're really into that.
My wife, I try to get her to come out to some shows every now and then, and she she likes the stuff on the radio. You know, she likes to sing along, and I always tell her the same thing. I'm like, well, come out enough, and you'll know the words, and you can sing along. So it's like, but there is something too that people want to have that song they can sing along to, the familiarity.
Right, right.
So, but yeah, I think you're on the, like, I think you definitely have the right idea though. You're like, where you're introducing this community, the listener to these bands, and the whole idea, like you're saying, is to get them to come out to a local show, get them out to an original show, you know, and right. like, so that's got to feel great when people say they want to actually go see them do the original stuff, not just a tribute.
I mean, for me, like, I don't have any vested interest in these tributes. Like, occasionally it's something I'm interested in, right? But it doesn't matter to me if it ever gets performed again. That's not the point of it. It's about this, like, special kind of one-time-only, you know, introduction. And, you know, I really mostly hope to promote the original bands. I hope that people buy their merch and go see them play again. But just using kind of tributes as this sort of vehicle to introduce people to that. And I think, you know, like, we really attract a crowd sort of outside of the music scene, you know, which is neat. It's neat to see people who show up because they saw that, you know, it's going to be a Neil Young band, right? That's an interesting concept that happens, you know?
Yeah, I think the part of the fun of a lot of these tributes and of course, all the sets that are going to be performed at your show is that some of these, you know, or most of them you can't see, or you know, whatever it might be. But like, a lot of these bands aren't touring, or, you know, people have passed, or whatever the case is. You know, I've talked to a little while ago. I had the guys of My Posse in Effect that are doing a Beastie Boys tribute now, and it's like, and they kind of joke, they don't really get why the, like, people are so excited about it, about them doing it, but it's like. But that's the whole thing, is that we're not going to get a Beastie Boys show anymore. And to see, you know, these guys getting up there and doing it well, you know, it's a lot of fun. So,
well, 11 years ago, we literally kicked this whole event off with the Beastie Boys.
Right.
And it was insane. I mean, it was actually, like, I didn't even expect the bands for the show to dress up. And, like, Rob Steele went and found, like, the right tracksuits and, like, you know, had a Jim Utz from Vintage Vinyl at the time, like, had helped them source all the instrumental 12 inches. And so, I mean, they had a DJ and they had the outfits, and they came out and people were like totally stunned by that, you know? And it's cool. Yeah. I mean, we get a lot of that, the feedback of people who, like, are seeing the long lost band. They're seeing, you know, a Fleetwood Mac who, at least at the time that we did Fleetwood Mac, like, they weren't possibly going to tour together again, the full lineup, you know. And, you know, and, like, Christian Schaefer from the RFT has even said, like, he enjoyed that Fleetwood Mac set more than the times he's seen them play, you know. And that's kind of part of the other thing, too, is there's also a freshness to it, right? So, I mean, even if some of these are acts that you can see, like, you know, I think Cake, for example, like, ironically, we had Bo and the Locomotive do Cake the same weekend Cake played Point Fest.
Oh, yeah.
It was so... I mean, they played, like, the same night. But I really believe, you know, that Bo did a more fresher job. It was more exciting. It was way less jaded. Mm-hmm. Or, for lack of a better word, you know. So it's really neat to see that, like, the enthusiasm come through, the youthful exuberance of kind of somebody taking a fresh take on it. And, you know, that's kind of another interesting thing is, you know, we kind of have another rule with the show that says, like, either commit to playing the set faithfully, like, note for note, tone for tone, or reinvent it as if your band wrote those songs. And it's funny because, you know, like, when, the Monads, who are like a punk bluegrass band from back in the day, when they did Devo, I thought we were going to get bluegrass Devo, and they took the stage with synths, and it was insane. It was dead on. It was note for note.
Yeah.
But then, you know, we had bands do Rihanna a few years ago, and, like, totally rework it into this, like, intricate indie thing, and it was amazing. Like, people were like jaw dropped.
Right.
So it's just like, it's a really neat thing to see. You kind of don't know what people are going to bring you when they come out. You're going to see a twist. And I think that's exciting. I think that's what gives sort of tributes their life a little bit.
You know, man. You said Devo, you ever dissolved it the other day online and the first time, but Devo doing Satisfaction from Rolling Stones, Otis Redding.
Yeah.
And but from SNL, like the live performance.
It's really good.
Yeah, it was like, it's crazy how like robotic and stuff they are. They acted and things like. But yeah, man, that would have been pretty wild to see, you know, seeing some Devo stuff live like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, we've had, you know, like the ABBA set from years ago was so like pitch perfect. I mean, it sounded like the record. You could close your eyes and it sounded like the record. And when you opened your eyes, it was like people you know
right.
on stage in a little club.
I think that's part of it too, is like my buddy of mine, Sean Cannon's been doing these Voodoo Player sets every Wednesday at Oyster Bar, and a lot of, he covers a lot of classic rock stuff every Wednesday. It's something different. And but I think that's part of it, is like to see it like inside Oyster Bar, seeing it in a small intimate venue right up, you know, you get to capture that energy. And like, if you like, he's a while back he did CCR and stuff, which was one of my favorite sets they did. And like, you know, if you were to go see CCR today or something, it would be in a giant amphitheater or arena or something, and it just doesn't have that feeling anymore, you know. Like you can still hear the songs, they sound fine, but that energy is not there like in a small club. So and that's a big part of it too.
Absolutely.
So this year we're at Del Mar Hall, August 24th, 25th, 26th.
Yep.
And you're starting with
80s, 90s, 2000. Yeah.
So how do we so let's go through the process of that. But how do we come about picking these, 15 groups this year?
Yeah. So, you know, I decided to go back to sort of the decades model. We did that in year two, and we did 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s in year two. And I kind of didn't realize, like now in hindsight, I realize that that worked so well because it gave both the bands a framework, and it also kind of gave the people attending an idea of what they were going to get. In years past, you know, we've done nights that have spanned decades and genres and, and a mismatch, you know, mix match. And it's kind of, that's part of the art form of being the curator, you know, is trying to craft the best flowing lineups and, you know, louder, more dynamic bands to the end and soft, you know what I mean? So everything feels really good. And that's harder to do when, you know, you're trying to figure out, like, how does Rage Against the Machine go with Bob Dylan or something like that. So in this case, like, you know, starting out at Del Mar Hall and, you know, trying to also I've noticed over the past couple of years that a lot of the newer bands who've been submitting to play, it's like their heroes are younger than mine.
Yeah.
Right. And that's a good thing, you know, but we kind of avoided more modern bands in the past just because it was like almost too soon. And now, like, you know, the 2000s decade is sort of long enough ago, and those are the heroes to so many people now, that it makes sense, right? So 80s, 90s, 2000s gave us a good framework to set this year up. And essentially what we do is we open submissions in around March. And, you know, you can go, any band can go on the website and fill out the form. And, you know, our form is a little bit demanding. We you know, ask a lot of prep out of these bands. And so the form sort of makes sure that they're ready for what the show entails. And then we usually get, 40 plus submissions a year, and we have to kind of sort out what are we going to do with that, you know. And I really, truly, I mean, I wish we could, you know, invite every band to play. I mean, I don't ever set out to be exclusionary, you know, and, you know, I try to keep the freshness in there too. I mean, we've had bands play multiple times, but in reality, when you look at least the last couple years, I mean, it's been largely like, you know, 70% new bands every year, you know, at least. So, you know, I think we only have three, maybe four out of the 15 who've ever played the show before playing this year, one of which hasn't played in like 6 years. So we sort through the submissions, and you know, the submission process sort of includes like, you know, kind of a pitch, and you know, between like, you know, what we know of the band and what they write, and you know, our sort of assessment of how we think they'll do. You know, is it sincere? Is it a good submission? You know, is it something we think people will like? Do we think they can pull it off? Do people want to come see them play? You know, and you know, we just kind of hash it all out and put a lineup together, and at the end of the day, if when we look at it, it like our gut feels good, then that's what we do. And you know, and I hate sending rejection letters. Yeah. Like that's awful. And I personally call every one of the accepted bands and further make sure like, okay, you know what you're getting into. This is a few months of work, and these are the terms and whatever, and we sort it all out. And so it's a whole lot of work up front, and then hopefully the payoff's really big.
Yeah.
But this year, I'm super proud of this lineup. I was sort of realizing, I think, that like we're getting lots of submissions every year from the same bands, and like the base wasn't growing, you know, and the last couple of years I've really put a lot of effort into just trying to make sure that more people knew the door was open. And this year I just feel like the lineup is really representative of St. Louis in many ways. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm proud of what we're going to present, and I really believe in what these folks can do. You know, this is talent end to end.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exciting.
And all of them pick the set they want to do? It wasn't like some kind of you had a list of some that you thought you might want to pull off? Or
so they submit, typically the bands submit two choices.
Yeah.
Since we did the decades this year, and those decades were tied to a specific date, I gave them the opportunity to submit two choices per decade if they wanted to. Because the idea was, if you're only available on Thursday, well then that's the 80s night.
Right.
So, you know, I can't consider a 2000 submission for the 80s. And then I picked the one that I think is the right fit. And, you know, I would say probably 90% of them or more was their first choice for the decade that we did. And I think after 11 years, I've gotten pretty good at, like, seeing through the lines and saying, like, oh, this is the one you're most passionate about. In some cases, I went to these bands and said, like, rank these, you know, let me know which one you really intend, because at the end of the day, I want them to be passionate.
Sure.
About what they do. It's not about what I pick for them. The Dolly Parton tribute, I actually approached them about doing this and saying, you guys should really submit, you know, Tortuga should really submit as Dolly Parton. I think it would be really cool.
Yeah.
And they talked about it, and they were like, oh my God, we would absolutely love to do this, you know? But even then, it still had to sort of pass muster against everything else that was submitted. It still had to compete, you know? But yeah. So
well,
I pick, but it's their choice, really. You know?
Yeah. Well, let's, so we got night one is the 80s. Like I said, Teresa Payne, Chaka Khan. I liked also that you kind of leaked all these out like one by one kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a slow build to the big reveal, but now all the details are out.
Yeah,
it's all official now.
And I like to give each band their due.
Sure.
I mean, we get about 15,000 hits to the website during this period, and so like each band gets like a lot of eyeballs. And again, because it's about promoting them, in my opinion.
Right.
You know.
So, Teresa Payne as Chaka Khan, Tortuga as Dolly Parton with Kenny Rogers, Paige Alyssa as Janet Jackson, Too Deep as Madonna, and Tenement Ruth, is that right?
Yeah.
As Stevie Nicks. So, that's your August 24th night.
Yep.
Night two, the 90s, on August 25th, will be my buddies, Fivefold as Third Eye Blind, Blank Generation as Outkast, which I'm very excited for that set.
Oh man, I'm so excited about that.
I'm a big Outkast fan, and so that'd be a lot of fun. I'm not sure how to say this one.
Katera and the So Folks as Lauryn Hill.
Yeah. Well, that was and that's a big one, too. Like, I know she just, a lot of people got real excited about her playing at Lou Fest last year and stuff. And
Katera? You mean Lauryn Hill. Yes.
So that'd be very exciting.
That is, that leak for Undercover Weekend was one of the biggest ones. People were pretty hot on that.
For sure.
Yeah.
Les Gruff and the Billy Goat, another friend of the show, is casting or Counting Crows. Yeah, I can't talk. And Ramona DeFlower, another friend, as the Offspring,
mm-hmm.
which that's a big part for me. Like, I mean, all the Too Deep also has been on the show. You know, it's really cool to see a lot of my friends are, you know, and like they're being part of this also and stuff.
Yeah.
And also for me discovering other new local music. Mm-hmm. And there's quite a few that I haven't had on my show yet that it makes me realize I need to get out and meet these people for
right,
sure.
So, right, for sure.
Getting into night three, the 2000s, on August 26th, you got the Daisy Ad with Insane Analog and the River Kittens as Gorillaz, which will be, that sounds pretty wild. It's going to be a fun one. The Fade as Justin Timberlake. Ida A Day as Erica Badu, School of Rock as Amy Winehouse, and We Should Leave This Tree as Death Cab for Cutie. A lot of variety, a lot of different stuff going on. These sound like three wild nights for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And, they're stacked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is there like a ticket deal if you get all like for the weekend or
So the single nights are $12 in advance and $15 at the door, but they're Four Hands Brewing has stepped up, and so our $30 three night VIP pass also gets you probably the cheapest Four Hands you'll ever have, especially at Delmar Hall all weekend, so that wristband gets you cheap beer plus cheaper tickets.
Nice.
Yeah.
Thanks, Four Hands.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. Yeah, they've been with us for a couple of years, and they're super supportive of local music.
Sure,
and local events.
I just threw the third birthday party for the show and reached out and asked if they would be interested in helping out and kicking in some beer, and they were happy to help. And so it was really cool to work with somebody like that that wants to be a part of this. So
yeah, they're really great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can find all these details and more at undercoverweekend.com. You can follow along on Facebook.
Yeah.
We have the Undercover Weekend page there, and we have Instagram also.
Instagram and Twitter.
And Twitter, yeah. So and of course, like you said, if people want to submit for next year, keep an eye out for in the spring. You can drop your name in and see if we can get you on there for next year's. But
absolutely,
yeah. This it's crazy because I guess this is something I've been watching for the last couple of years. I know, like I mentioned, a lot of friends from the show, like Old Souls Revival did last mm-hmm. year. Various Hands, I remember mm-hmm. seeing them on. In the past and things like that, and like it's just something that's been on my radar, but I don't know how I haven't made it to an event, and especially
hopefully this year we'll change that.
Yeah,
and that's a common story. I mean, we also move the event up this year. It used to be in September, and kind of with festivals coming in, Lou Fest and all these things coming in over the years, we slowly moved our way toward the end of September, and then you hit playoff baseball, so
yeah.
You kind of hit like a very fatiguing month of festivals and things. So we moved to the end of August to get ahead of all of that this year. So hopefully there's a lot less competition for people's time. So
it is funny in this city how there is that term being, our show is baseballed, or mm-hmm. something, because if there's Cardinals baseball on, it's a it's tough to compete with that.
Well, there's that whole story with the Pearl Jam show, I guess, when we won the World Series a few years ago.
Oh, yeah?
The arena, Kiel Center, or whatever the hell it's called now, erupted in cheers, like, in the middle of a song.
Yeah.
And they were like, what is going on? And it was because we had won, and everybody's on their phone.
Yeah.
And, I think I played a show at Off-Broadway years ago where they just put a TV up on the bar.
Yeah. I was at... It was that old rock house for Lucas Nelson, I guess, what was it, 05 or 06, whatever, when they, when like Freeze hit the home run and put it into game six or something like that.
Yeah.
And so like the town went nuts that night, and they, but anyway, obviously Lucas knew he wasn't going to be able to compete with the baseball game, and so like they put Old Rock House as the big projector there, put the game on, so we all watched the game, and then like the last out, Lucas and the band took the stage and played until you know whatever it was, one or two, whatever that you know they finished their set and stuff, and so it was just really cool. Thing that we didn't have to miss the game and we got the show and stuff, so
right,
it was a good night. But yeah, you got to watch out for Cardinal baseball in this town.
Absolutely.
So is there like one set that's been slipping through over the years that you haven't been able to get down there or anything like that, or a certain band or a certain tribute?
Oh man, you know, like we finally did Springsteen last year, and I mean there's some of those that are crazy, you know, that took forever to do or that we haven't done.
It's kind of hard to sometimes, like you know, like you'll maybe want to do a Springsteen, but it's hard to try to find the right band that can pull it off. Or
in most cases, I mean, for especially for the coveted stuff, try to be a little bit choosy, you know, of who gets in there. And you know what? That's all on my judgment. You know what I mean? Like, so I'm potentially wrong. And there's times where I've been wrong, and you know, I've been the dissenting opinion about a choice, but we made it anyway, and have been surprised too. You know that folks rose to the occasion. Even like gosh, why can't I think of the name of the band? They did Arcade Fire a few years ago, and like I just wasn't into the modern tributes. Like it just at the time it just didn't feel like it would land. You know, and I'm wondering why I'm blanking on their name, but Elliot Pearson sings for them.
Search parties,
yes, thank you. You know, and it wasn't that like I didn't think they could do it. It just was like, to what level, you know? And like, holy cow, like that was one of the best sets of that whole year.
Yeah.
And it was an early set. And it, you know, even like the ABBA tribute was like unbelievable. Like one of the best sets we've ever done. And one of those things that I'm like, yeah, that sounds cool. Let's do it. But you just don't know, you know?
Sure.
This year, you know, Janet Jackson, I'm really stoked about. That's been one I've wanted to get on the show for a long time. I'm stoked to have some hip-hop this year. The Outkast, I mean that's a lofty goal. to do Outkast. I'm really stoked about that. Timberlake and Gorillaz are cool choices. I mean, to me, like I really get excited about the more mainstream choices in this case, primarily because what it does to the audience. Right? Like, it has an impact. It resonates. And so, you know, as much as that may not always sound cool, I guess, you know, obscurity doesn't necessarily win here.
Right.
You know? So, yeah, I feel like this year we've got a number of ones that I'm really stoked to have. Even Counting Crows, like, that's going to be great.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's the cool thing is, like, out of the 15 bands we have this year, every one of them is dedicated to making this set the best set it's ever, you know, it ever could be.
Right.
And that's really exciting.
Well, that's the same, just like you're saying too, Matt, them seeing what angle they take on it, because you're saying Counting Crows, Les Gruff is more of a traditional kind of honky-tonk, almost bluegrass type of music, and for them to take on something like, you know, with like a Counting Crows that doesn't have violin or
right,
you know, different things. Like, so it'd be interesting to see their take on it if they make it a little more, you know, honky tonk, or if they stay to the traditional sound of how, you know, the original.
Absolutely.
So yeah, that'd be fun. Is there so we mentioned several sets, I mean, but is there one iconic moment of the last 11 years that really sticks out for you? Like,
man. Like I mentioned, like the Huey Lewis thing was like just it was just such a, like the room was like sweating Huey Lewis that night. I mean, it was unbelievable, the vibe in the room. I mean, you know, the Rage Against the Machine set a few years ago was kind of right when all the Mike Brown stuff was going on, and it felt a little bit like a Valve release, which was crazy. I mean, Rolling Stones was insane. The Fleetwood Mac set, you know, because that was an all male band who essentially went and got all of the best female singers in town to guest.
Oh, nice! Yeah,
guest with them, and so there was like four Stevie Nicks.
Yeah,
and it was awesome, and it was a great, you know, approach. You know, man,
Funky Butt Brass did Huey Lewis a little while ago. They did these like covered in brass
sets.
They did Prince, and then they did Huey Lewis. Yeah. And again, like, people were just super excited about hearing these Huey Lewis songs, especially done on a horn arrangements and stuff like that.
Right.
But it was really well done. But, you know, people love Huey in this town, and I think he's he's playing Lou Fest this year. Yeah, so that's that'll be a big set for him for sure.
Yeah, Huey Lou Fest in the news.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, we'll come out and be a part of this year. This is going to be some. Yeah, I foresee a lot of very cool moments coming up, and so I'm excited to, you know, hopefully I'll be there to watch most of them in person. But if not, we can talk about them next year as we're promoting the 12th annual.
So, yeah, right.
Yeah, man.
Absolutely.
Well, this has been awesome. Great to, you know, officially meet you and get to talk about all this stuff. And again, grab your tickets with Ticketmaster.
Yeah, it's on Ticketmaster. You can go through undercoverweekend.com or delmarhall.com and click the links for tickets there.
Right. And again, follow along on all your social media. And if you don't know any of these bands mentioned, check them all out. There's some really great talent in this city, and support local music.
Absolutely. And our website links to everybody's everything, their band camps and their Instagrams and everything. So if you want to buy their records or just see what they're up to, we have all the links on there as well.
Very cool. Yeah. Well, Michael, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'll see you soon, man.
Absolutely. Take care.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Well, yeah, that was it.